Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Challenge Vendettas or Hot Butt Podcast for episode 12. I am Brian Cohen. Here, me, as always, is my co-host, Ali Lesher. Ali, how are you?
I am fine.
I'll take fine. Fine's not bad.
I'm within an inch of my life. No, I don't. We just talked. Well, you know this, but people listening don't know that we just like conferred that like, okay, next week the finale is probably going to start. Next week after that, it's going to be over. Where did this come from?
We're going to go to the finale with like 12 people. It's insane. This is the problem with them doing all these two big continues and then not extending the season. Like they're like doing a weird combo of doing the amount of episodes we want, but not like balancing a season correctly.
I'm shocked. And I know it seems, I'm sure, to people like, you know, I'll complain either way about what happens, but I feel no resolution here. Like, I don't feel the stakes of like, you know, when they said when TJ said we're going to the Czech Republic, I was like, I'm not ready for this. Like, I'm not ready for just two more episodes to be over. Like, I think as a season, it makes more sense timeline wise, but I don't think they've like really developed the arc enough to be on the precipice of the final.
Yeah. And I'm surprised they even thought the final, like with seeing this many people left, if I just heard like, oh, we're going somewhere else, I'm like, all right, this is just like we're getting closer to a final, but there's still so many people left. How could we go to a final with this many people? Normally there's six and eight, most eight. There's still like 12, 13, 14 people left.
Well, now we're left with, yeah, we're left with 12. But two people will go home next, so that'll take us to 10. It is also confusing that there's only going to be one winner. You'd think we'd go down to like the lowest number possible for the final.
Yeah. Like, there's going to be so many people that do a final and I guess get nothing if that's the structure of the season.
I mean, maybe we're moving to a Bachelor style situation where, you know, the move to a new location doesn't necessarily mean hometowns. No fantasy suites, maybe another elimination or two by random draw. I don't know.
A few more steps before you get that magic key, I guess.
Am I crazy? Like, I'm just feeling like we're in the middle of the season.
No, I mean, I feel like this has been a common theme for the challenge where it feels like a long season. There's so many people, then all of a sudden, boom, you're at the final. And they structure the middle season well in terms of storylines, but they're not very great at structuring the end of season storylines. Because that's usually where we see less of the drama and stuff. But a lot of the drama from this season has been about the actual games. That's what's kind of made it even more confusing.
And okay. Well, the rites of passage they have this episode, I'm jumping ahead, where it's like, you know, everyone starting the last that challenge that ended this episode, yeah, getting their little moment. It was just like person after person after person. It was like a clown car of people looking forward to winning the money when we're only going to have one winner.
Yeah. A big time yada, yada, yada of a challenge. This is very similar to what they did, I think, the final last season when they were on that like jet ski or whatever going across the water. And we got all their flashbacks. But here, yeah, we do it with still so many people left. So very, very odd timing.
All right. So believe it or not, we have to go all the way back to Nelson and Natalie to discuss the start of this episode. A lot of ground was covered this episode. A lot of things changed.
Yeah, well, as opposed to this was, we get, instead of to be continued, where we only get like a three quarter of an episode, here we got an episode and a half. So you can't really even complain about this episode not even ending with a closed story arc, because we're dipping into next week already.
Which does, to me, beg the question why we got so many half episodes in the beginning if now you're going to give me an episode and a half at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think we tossed this around, what was it, last week or 2 weeks ago, that people speculated just to keep Bananas on the actual show as much as possible, and that kind of is bearing out a little more truth to it.
Did we talk about that last week?
It might have been last week. It might have been, maybe it was in the Lost podcast that no one ever listened to, so it could have been that.
It's lost in my mind, too. I'm thinking you talked to Dane or something, because that was not... That's genius. I feel like I haven't heard that before.
It could have been that, too. I don't know. I guess I talked to about the show to many different people. But that was, I guess, that was a theory that came up at one point.
So what do you think of Natalie's plea to Nelson here?
I mean, it's worth the shot, but I'm glad Nelson didn't come across as a total buffoon and buy it, because this was a clear case of like, you had your chance to prove your loyalty. You didn't. Saying you're going to do it again is only going to set me up for more failures. So, I mean, sure, I'll take whatever you're saying for what it's worth, but that's it's not worth much.
I was like pretty shocked that he didn't just buy this right away. Like, I feel like a woman crying is enough to get Nelson to do anything. But from my perspective with Natalie, I can see why. I don't know if this is what gets her the hate, but like in this moment, it was probably the most I've disliked her this season, because she comes crying and, oh my God, I let these men ruin my game and I should have been loyal to you and I don't know what I was thinking. I wanted her confessional, like cut to her being like, shit, I got to tell Nelson whatever I can now. Like, I don't think she made the wrong game move by deferring to Tony and Zach necessarily. Like, I don't know what she really has to gain by defending her alliance of like 1 minute. And presumably she's worked with Tony right. and Zach through bananas. So I didn't think it was like that crazy of a thing that she didn't really have much say fighting for Nelson anyway against them. So like, I wanted her to be like owning her game in confessional, saying, I'm just telling him what I need to tell him now that he's back. And the fact that she's like still lying to like Rob talks about this a lot too. Like, don't lie to us. Like, the fact that she's looking to confessional and actually weeping over this, I'm not interested in that.
Yeah, there's no way she should be this upset about someone that she was like actively planning against no more than like a week or two ago. Now you're absolutely devastated that you went back on your word. No, like you're devastated that you were forced to make a decision and you did what you had to do, which was break an alliance that was basically meaningless to begin with. So just, yeah, as you said, just own that, not like you actually being upset.
I don't mind either the big bowl of irony that Kayla serves up after, though. Like, oh, Natalie's realizing she has to actually follow through with things. Oh, right, Kayla, like you and Jenna did with Camilla and Cara. Natalie's definitely the first person to ever lie in the challenge. I forgot right, that. Thank right. you.
But, I mean, she did make a good point about Natalie's the person who just makes promises and then hopes she actually doesn't have to deliver on any of them. So that's a good... That's a dangerous ploy to have.
I mean, but that's the challenge. Like, I know that that's maybe more Big Brother and that like alliances move week to week more in Big Brother than they do in the challenge. But look at Kyle. The first thing Kyle did out of the gate was look at Corey in the eye and shake his hand and then cut his throat. Like, Natalie is not the first person to show up and backstab. Look at Tony and Bananas. Like, these are things we celebrate on the challenge. Now, Natalie.
Oh, for sure. I'm just saying that at some point, you actually, if you're going to say something, you have to do it to some people. You have to live up to your promise to some people. So that way it looks like if you give a promise, it actually matters, which I'm sure Zach and Tony now are going to have a problem doing.
Right. No, definitely. Natalie is she's not the first person to do it, but she definitely hasn't done it as deftly as others.
Right.
But yeah, one thing that kept being pervasive here throughout is TJ's new role as a location scout. Did you notice this?
I noticed he was very fond of wherever they were in Spain for the challenge this week. He's like, this is the most beautiful place ever.
Yeah, he was like, I found the most beautiful spring in Spain. And I'm just like loving the idea that they send TJ out like a month in advance, location scout. Like, he's slipping papers under people's doors. Can we use this in the background of the challenge? I don't know. I really went with it. We haven't done this in a while where we like talk about the challenge doctors. I want to start imagining TJ the challenge scout, because then he came up again like you're saying. He's like, oh, this is the most beautiful place in Spain. I want to watch the like reality, the challenge pre-show with TJ just going across the Czech Republic and Spain looking for final locations,
the spinoff on the Travel Channel, TJ Travels. Yeah, that'd be great. But what's interesting is I couldn't tell. I don't think he was, but it seemed like he was being sarcastic, because then when they cut to the spring, like it didn't seem that impressive. Like, it seemed like a very tiny little river. And like, he was bringing it up to be like, oh, I found this most magical place. And I thought there was like a hint of sarcasm in there, because it wasn't, I mean, I'm sure Spain's beautiful, but that didn't seem like the most beautiful spots.
Oh, Mr. New York isn't impressed by the beautiful spring in Spain. Okay, Brian.
I'm just like, I hear like a beautiful spring. I think it's supposed to be like majestic out of like fairy tales and stuff.
Oh, sure,
like that.
Sure.
It was just like a little body of water that like, was there. It's all right. I don't know. It's not that great.
All right. Well, defer to the audience on whether or not TJ is being sarcastic. It's not really in his nature to critique nature, but like, we'll see.
So for the quick jump, as you said, to the challenge, this was called Spanish Treasure. There was double the names. They didn't get very creative with the challenge names. It was all just Spanish in them. They got very basic, but this was Spanish Treasure. And this is almost straight out of any type of Survivor challenge that they've ever done, where one by one, someone has to dive down with some type of ball and just put it in a net, and with the weight of it, it'll push up a treasure chest, and you have to drag your treasure chest to the shore.
There you go.
And fastest time wins.
And unlike normal, the Troika is making the teams.
Yes, once again, the Troika makes the teams, and it is one of the more comical team selections and eventual follow-throughs that we will see of the season, because the team that loses is maybe one of the worst performances I think I've ever seen in any show ever.
Speaking of comical, before we get to that, because, yeah, this was pretty instant classic here. The return of the sponsor, we have Burger King sending the Troika to get Burger King.
Yeah, but, and don't forget the crowns. There are crowns as well.
Jonathan, the best part of this episode, I am not Tony eating the burger, which people did love, is when TJ opens up the chest of the crowns, like as though, like, ooh, a fortune and burgers. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Foreman wants to know, and I have to believe we've talked about this before, what's your favorite fast food chain?
For me, it's Wendy's, but I could also, in a moment, would strike me as McDonald's. Late night McDonald's, normal Wendy's.
So, so you'll slum it with your like booty call to McDonald's, but your day chick is Wendy's?
Yeah, if we're doing ding, marry, kill, it would be ding, McDonald's, marry, Wendy's, kill, Burger King.
Okay, well, clearly we are not getting any Burger King sponsorship here. I feel like I have said to you before on with a microphone in my face that I don't eat fast food, and not because I feel like I'm above it, but like, you know, like I feel like I've had this exact
bringing back memories of something that we talked about, but I feel like at this point we've talked about every possible topic of all time, so I'm sure it's come up.
So I thought that too, but we got a little nugget about Leroy later in the episode. I'm like, shit, there's still more to cover about these guys. Anyway, so I think I previously said Five Guys because I tend to not eat at like actual fast food locations. Again, not because I think I'm above it. I'm below it. So that's why.
I feel like it, by the way, I think it came up during like an Are You the One preview podcast, because I remember this is my memory is super weird sometimes, but I remember I think Moosty said his favorite item at McDonald's was like the filet of fish, and I took such offense to that, and then it led to you saying you don't like McDonald's or any fast food. But
that seems familiar. I don't like in your version that I just said something for no reason. I feel like we must have talked about it.
No, I'm saying that we talked about that Moosty like filet of fish from McDonald's, and then I asked what your favorite thing was from McDonald's, and you're like, I just don't like fast food.
So, but since we last spoke, I have tried Chick-fil-A, and I actually tweeted out, like, I'm not sure where I'm supposed to stand on Chick-fil-A, but I have also eaten there for anybody who wants to know. I don't endorse their politics, just to also have that on the record.
You can endorse their chicken, though, so that's fair.
I don't endorse anything except to say that I have eaten their food within the last year. Okay.
It's like the chicken with the red light for Kramer.
Yeah, don't at me. It's becoming where I have to say don't at me every freaking week. Also, quick shout out, happy birthday to Jonathan Foreman, whose birthday will be when this comes out. Okay.
Oh, boom.
No happy day or happy news for the women, though, who inexplicably are going to face an elimination despite being one down anyway.
It's quite baffling. I think I sometimes can get a sense of where the challenge producers, decision makers are going, and then they toss this at me, and then I'm like, all right, whatever, let's get crazy.
Yeah, Clayton O'Dell says, maybe I missed something, but why the hell was this a girl's elimination?
No, you didn't miss anything. It doesn't make any sense.
I don't know if they, like, I don't know what to say. It's not like there's like a lot of dead weight that's being cut, you know, like the women who are going in here are like some of the only women that could like stand up to the men.
Yeah, it should have clearly been a guy's day. It made no sense that it wasn't. No clear explanation why. No real discussion amongst everyone why. I guess they probably just cut that part out, but there should have been.
But all right, let's talk about the grenade, because that's definitely more interesting than speculating why something happened that doesn't make sense.
So their choices, I believe they brought it up last week, but just in case don't remember, it was cash, which is take anyone's cash. There was time crunch, adding time to someone, or tying someone's ankles together.
Yeah. So the second this starts happening, I was sort of like, why would you pick time crunch? I feel like time, when you see what the challenge is, tying up someone's ankles before we knew that that meant sitting out, my initial reaction was that tying up someone's ankles would add more time than the producer's going to add for time crunch.
I would agree with you as well. And the fact that this led to someone just completely sitting out is, once again, another thing I'm thinking, what the hell are they even thinking having this as a grenade option to begin with? But this is the result, and it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, somebody, I didn't pull it, but somebody did ask, like, they've had sitting out of the challenge as an option for a grenade before. Like, why give this as an option? Did they just think no one was going to pick it? Like, are they not even, are they anticipating what grenades are going to be used now?
Yeah, I'm guessing they're, maybe they thought people would do the time crunch for both of them. But it, again, it just, it makes no sense. If the result of a grenade is not the result of the grenade, then it's not a good grenade.
All right. So let's talk about what Miss Cam decides to do. Poor Cam.
So Cam sticks the grenade on Kara for the second time, giving her a time penalty.
Yeah, I when this happened, I was just like, oh, I'm loving the Cam Kara rivalry. Like, I would sign up to watch them be rivals. I would sign up to watch them have to be on a team challenge. I would sign up to watch them play as individuals just on the same season. Like, I'm loving them as rivals, and I can't really explain why, besides they're just like two badass women who, like, we see in the end of the episode, can like laugh about it, but still like really show up and fight each other.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of a good spot for Cam to be, because not only if push came to shove would she have the potential to beat Kara in elimination, but to go head to head with probably the strongest female going and someone who's consistently going to be on these shows, if it ever leads to like arrivals or anything like that, I think that's a really good spot for her to be in.
It's almost to the point where they couldn't make them a team, because like, dear God, that would be that would be madness. Yeah. But I'd be here for it.
Yeah, it would be quite fun.
All right, so I think the most impressive thing that happens this episode is Brad's and quick analysis that knowing the Troika will make the teams after they use the grenade means that the Troika can F you with the person that you disabled. Now,
yes,
is this a fuck up on MTV's part? Like, should the Troika have made the teams before they use the grenade?
No, I think this way is a lot more interesting, because I think they did it the other way last time.
Right.
I believe so. I think this way, at least it forces not Cam, but eventually Brad to think about like, oh, maybe I can now use this grenade to help my advantage, because I think Cam probably could have done the same where if she just brought up to the truck like, oh, why don't we work together? Let me be on your team. Who do we want to put this grenade on? And that way I can, it'll help me. I think that's kind of the way to go.
Are you surprised that, so just anyone who like wasn't watching, Brad asked TJ to clarify and then chooses to tie up Kyle's legs as to not piss off the Troika after sort of making a verbal deal with Zach and Tony that he would not be put on Brad's team?
So am I surprised by,
sorry, are Brad's you surprised? Decision? No, are you surprised? I mean, if that's what you want to answer, but are you surprised that Zach and Tony honored this with Brad?
No, because I think it makes sense to have Brad be on their team because he is a strong competitor that you would want to utilize him and then his grenade doubly. Where if this was, you know, obviously, like, let's say this was like Leroy, who was someone you don't necessarily would want on your team for this challenge, I think that's where you would maybe then backstab him, have him be stuck on the grenade. So for having Brad on your team, I think it makes a lot of sense.
It really is amazing, because if you had told me that we'd be talking about Brad in episode 12 and it wasn't that people were still trying to get him eliminated, I would be shocked. I did not think Brad was long for this world with the way his season started out.
Yeah, I mean, he was basically target number one like amongst almost everyone, and then it just kind of faded away. I guess other house drama and everything kind of like escalated from there, but yeah, he's been able to stay under the radar amongst all this. Like, he hasn't really gotten any fights since like the whole Pizzagate thing, which now feels like a million years ago. So I mean, good on him.
And yeah, I guess with the fact that it's a female elimination, you wouldn't expect them to like try to get Brad on a shitty team. What's the point?
Right.
But I did think this was really, really smart on Brad's part. I'm not so sure like calling that out as the reason was necessary. Like, I feel like Brad, same thing with Kyle, like Brad's advantage is that people think he's dumb, for whatever reason. Like, I don't think people are afraid to go up against Brad in like a puzzle, let's say. And so I feel like Brad, like, revealing that he's like thinking five steps ahead, like, anytime you show that you're gaming, it's like, I think, a risk, but definitely still worth thinking this way. Just whether or not out loud was the answer is questionable.
Yeah, but we see this from Brad. Like, we saw, this episode or last one where he wanted to, like, talk out how to, like, think about for the elimination vote. I think it was this one where he's the one who wants to kind of sit down with Tony and talk it out. I think we even saw that going way back to, like, the beginning of the season, that he wanted to kind of talk out stuff. So I think this is not something new for Brad, especially for someone who's, like, a veteran. I think people would think he would know how to kind of play and manipulate the game a little bit.
Fair enough. So, yeah, Cam royally fucks herself. The teams shake out to be Zach, Tony, Brad, Jemmy, Natalie, Nicole, and Devin against Kyle, Kara, Cam, Nelson, Leroy, and Kayla. Well, one thing that struck me with this is, like, they allow the teams to be odd number teams, and they allow to put them to put Kyle on one of those teams. Should Kyle have just been removed from playing and do an equal 6-6?
Again, I would say yes, but this is like the most clusterfuck producer thing challenge episode I've seen in a while, so it's very hard to, obviously that's what they should have done, but to say I'm surprised that they didn't do that, I would say no.
I mean, it's just like, this to me was way too much of an advantage for the Troika based on like nothing but manipulating people to letting them beat the Troika had.
Yeah. And we see again, like, how, I mean, that's kind of been the theme. I didn't think being like specifically in the Troika was going to be worth that much this season as just like, you know, the people who make the decision. I never anticipated the power of the Troika to trickle over week to week. And now you just see from like someone like Tony, who's just able, kind of once you get in it, it's like, almost you can't get out, that it's such a huge power advantage.
Well, you could get out, but people are stupid, and we'll talk about that. All right, so basically Team 2 just can't get it done. Nobody can swim, and it's a huge, huge fail.
Yes, Team 1. I mean, I think Team 1, it's hard to judge if they actually did like this that well, because there was no real competition and no way to judge it, but I mean, it seemed like they did pretty well. They did in a little over in 15:35, and then Team 2, I don't think they ever got one ball down. It was one mess up after another. I don't think that no one really shined at all.
One of the listeners noticed, and I noticed this too, that the first or the second team was watching the first team go with towels on. So do you think like the second team actually went first and just totally screwed up?
I don't. I think maybe, is it possible they were just in the water to kind of see? I mean, do they get to see practice people like do it? So maybe they're in the water, kind of see that, or maybe they just went in the water and just sort of just had. I don't think they went first.
I have my tinfoil hat with.
I kind of wish they showed it. I kind of wish they showed it the way they did, because I would love to know and how long it actually took them to do it then.
Well, I think the idea would be that they never did it, that they like DQ'd.
Oh, and then they just forced Team 1 to finish, just do it however long.
That's probably unlikely. Fine.
Who knows with the show, though? Never know.
Oh, God. The podcast is just totally devolving into, like, who can say?
I mean, who can say, though? Who can say why they would do a girls' elimination when there's, like, you know, 5-2 guys to girls? But who knows?
Let's let Marianne say. Marianne Curtin says, quote, people that go on the challenge and don't know how to swim shouldn't be allowed to come back until they learn. Paraphrasing a comment made. Seems like common sense to me. That second team was embarrassing. How do you feel about the non-swimmers?
I mean, it's our boy Leroy. You know, I thought he was really making strides. And then he just didn't. He kind of went back to square zero here, and this is not good. No, I'm not. I meant square zero, because it's not even square one. This is square zero.
So to answer Marianne's question.
that was a good deflection, my man.
No, it's tough, right? Like, people say that about Survivor. Like, how can you go on Survivor without knowing how to make a fire? Like, there is something to everyone having weaknesses. Like, you could say, like, how is Jemmy on the challenge without being like a CrossFit Cara Maria demon? You know, like, how does anyone go on without stellar athletic ability in every area? Or how is Banana still resting on saying he's bad at puzzles? Like, that is learnable. But I think there needs to be, like, everyone has to have a weakness. Otherwise, I don't know what we're watching. So it doesn't bother me that much. I think it's a fact of life. Like, Cam is going to get invited back on whether she's a strong swimmer or not. Like, I love Leroy's effort to take swim lessons and watch YouTube videos, but like, I think it's fine. I think there are people who have other weaknesses besides swimming that just aren't as apparent in the swimming challenge.
Yeah, I think what the swimming weakness is just shows itself much more, because when you just look so weak when you're not able to swim, because you're just like flailing around like this. I think it was with Cam. They needed like this, the divers to come save her, where, you know, if you're struggling with like a block or something lifting it, other people can come and like help you. It just looks a lot worse when you're all by yourself in the water.
Agreed. Okay, I'm starting to get mad because, like, I see the next thing in my notes is the Troika deliberation to see who becomes the Troika, and I'm fired up. Sorry to yell into the microphone, both to you and to the listeners, but is this the stupidest effing thing I've ever seen?
It's weak. It's so weak. It's just like, I don't know other word other than just like pathetic by all the girls. I mean, they had all the excuses they were using were just complete nonsense. Because as Devin said, like, he was like, I'm on board. I'll support you. I mean, they did not have one. I mean, it should have been 2-1 or even 3-0 at this point. Like, you got to have, it's a girl's day. There's no reason the guys should be taking over.
I'm like speechless, which I think is maybe a first for my entire life, certainly my podcast life. This was so baffling to me, especially when Zach, like, the girl's logic was stupid, but Zach's logic being, quote, I don't want to lose power. Like, the girls are like, it's a girl's day. And he's like, I know, but I don't want to lose power. What? How does that get him in the fucking Troika? Oh, excuse me, in the flipping Troika?
I mean, I think, it makes total sense for the guys, because they see once you're in the Troika, for the grenades can't be used against you the following week. And for the most part, like, they've been doing so many team challenges, you're gonna be able to make the teams next week. And if they're thinking maybe they don't know the structure, maybe it's a guy's day next week, they want to be in control. So for them, I totally understand why they would want to stay in power, because we see how valuable that power is. It just, the girl should never have let them take over.
That's not what I mean. I, of course, why wouldn't you want to be in the Troika? What I mean is, like, that's the best he could come up with to explain it, and that works, you know, like, that, yeah, is bullshit. Works. So
yeah, it's total
okay. So Jonathan Shishko, wow, Jonathan, please let me know how to pronounce your name, I'm so sorry, says, why do the challenge women just defer to the men so often? There has never been a Troika with more than one woman in it.
I don't know. I think it must be this cast of characters for the girls this season, that they're afraid to push the issues, stand up for themselves, take any ownership, afraid to make a move. I don't know. All the above. It's just been a very poor showing.
Edward Morris says, is Jemmy the only girl who plays the game?
It, at least effectively. I mean, I think other people try to play the game. Like, you see Kayla and like Natalie trying to play the game. But I mean, Jemmy's done a very good job. Like, even here, like, she was like the one person, I guess, not really the one person, but clearly this worked out for her. Like, she's done very well staying out of elimination, because she knows her strengths and her weaknesses. And she knows if she gets in, she can go home. So for her, she's done very well this season, as she said.
So this is going to sound like results oriented, but I promise I thought this before I knew the result. I actually only think this was a stupid ass move for Natalie, because Jemmy has had her success this season by her alliances, standing by her alliance with this group of people. We saw her not vote against Bananas that everyone freaked out about. Like, this is her alliance. I don't see any reason that they would be going for her in this situation. Same with Nicole for the most part. Like, I think, and I think Natalie had the clearest argument, besides the fact that you say, like, this is a girl's day, all three of us should be in the Troika. Like, Natalie should say, okay, if we're keeping the Troika the same because we got credit for making the teams, then I belong with the two of them, and it's a girl's day, Brad. Like, you'll get your time, or you can duke it out with the two guys. Like, Natalie actually had legs to stand on for the same freaking logic as Zach and Tony were using. And even more so because it was a girl's elimination. And I think her keeping herself out when she has no alliance with Zach and Tony, you watched them do this exact same thing to Brittany last week. You know, we'll keep you safe. And then they screw them. and you were a part of it.
Yep.
And the fact that you were witness to that and you're going to trust them when you've been in bed, not literally, but in bed with Nelson, who they don't work with. Like, I can't understand for the life of me why she believed this bullshit deal with basically the devil.
Yeah, 100%. I think the biggest point that you, additional to what you said, is that she's the one who's most alone in the house. Like, for Nicole and Jemmy, at least they have some level of an alliance with them that it would make sense that they would honor it. For Natalie, like, if anything, she's one of the person they're probably targeting because she's not with them. So it makes completely no sense for her to keep herself vulnerable at this point in the game.
Now, I'm kind of surprised that we've seen things going the way that they've been going, that we've seen, like, we'll get to the Inquisition later. We'll get to the Inquisition, but, like, we see them all pitching themselves as competitors you'd want to run a final with. I don't really understand how Jemmy has gotten away with not being a target based on who you want to run a final with. I feel like at this point, any other season, we'd be having that consideration. But for whatever reason, like, she knew she wouldn't be on the block, and she wasn't.
Yeah, I'm still very confused by this logic of I'm someone you want to run a final with, because even in all these seasons where you're not partnered with just one person and then that's it. For anytime they start partnering you with people, it kind of bounce around. For the most part, I think you're almost paired with everyone.
Well, not...
So even if... but, like, isn't it, though? Isn't that usually the way
so
it works?
So last season, no, because they let people choose and you could choose the same person. So that's why, like, Jordan ended up with Tori, like, three times. So if you were ahead, they let you. I think that was the first time they let you do that. So who knows? But, yeah, usually it's three parts, and that's... So, but I do think, like, you can get Jemmy on the puzzle part and have two other people with her on, like, swimming and paddling and running, or you could get her on the shitty part and somebody else could get her benefit. Like, I would rather run with three people of the opposite sex who have basically the same skill set.
Yeah. And again, it kind of, this further shows, like, I don't get why they're hiding the fact of what's going to eventually come at the final of just the one winner. Cause I mean, that I feel like would change so many different decisions throughout the game, where for both the guys and the girls, I feel like the girls would be much more focused about getting some of the stronger guys out. And even for some of the guys who look to get some of the stronger girls out, like, I just don't get why they would hide such a important piece of this season from them when they're making these decisions.
Well, I think you answered your own question, because I don't think they want a final with one strong man, one strong woman, and the rest like layups. Like, I don't think they want to see, like, or even if they told them further back, like, I don't think they want to see Kaylee, Jemmy, and Kara, and Zach, Devin, and whoever else is on the season.
I guess
I don't really want to see that either, to be honest.
No, but I want them to play knowing the rules, which I know is a lot to ask for the challenge, but I just was just hoping.
Sure. I think it's a fair hope that you would know, like, the rules. I think one thing that will result from this is, like, people will be thinking about it, right? Like, there's no, before you always, like, you see how they're playing, like, okay, you want me on your team, because they assume it's going to be individual, like, you know, time, adding the times of the heats with different partners, and as we've seen traditionally. But now when they do this elimination, God knows what it'll look like. But when they do this final, sorry, not elimination, when they do this final, it will be on people's minds. And if they mess it up enough, it becomes to the point where it's so unpredictable that you just can't even think about it. And you just kind of go to the end with the people who can help you get to the end.
Yeah, I guess that's a positive spin on it.
If that made any sense, like, words escape me these last 2 weeks. I need a vacation.
Sometimes you start a sentence, you don't even know where it's going.
No, I start knowing where it's going. I just have trouble getting there. It's like my GPS breaks, you know?
I gotcha.
All right. So then, as if it wasn't bad enough that the Troika is going to be these three dudes, they also end up getting to pick the person who goes into the girls' elimination on the other side.
Well, that I'm going to put immediately at the feet of not Leroy, who I think Kyle said it was. This is 100% Cam's fault for going in.
Explain.
Well, okay, so they do a vote. It ends tied. They're doing a revote. Cam has to know that if it goes to a tie again, the Troika picks, and that she very likely might go in. Why does she not flip her vote? And instead of just sticking on Kara, just be like, I'm sorry, Kayla, I got to say it myself. She did this almost exact same thing earlier in the season. You have to do it again. Just vote in Kayla.
Yeah, I think Cam had more faith this time that she wouldn't be the one going in because it is the exact same situation. I think Cam, Leroy flipping his vote would have helped Cam not have to turn against her alliance again. Like, she just kind of made up with Kayla for the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's also the end of the game, right? Like, it's getting close. So I think at this point, if anything, more so even in the beginning of the game where you're still trying to keep your alliance here, it's 100% survival mode. You have to say Kayla here.
Yeah. No, you do. You're right. I didn't even think about that. You're 100% right. I think, and we get the confessional from Cam later saying she didn't think that Troika was going to put her in. Her bad.
Well, her bad.
Okay. So for the deliberation, were you surprised at all with who ended up going in?
No, I mean, I think it was clear that they were going to do Kara and Kayla. I think that was good. And then for Natalie, I mean, this, as we talked about, this was her bed, and she caused this by not putting herself in that room. So this is what happens.
It is pretty amazing that, and I think Devin says this in the original deliberation when Tony and Zach are saying, like, you guys are all safe. Like, did the women actually not realize that at least one of them would have to go in, even if it was as a pawn? Because when Cam, there's only three women, and when Cam goes, whoever goes into elimination, right, you still have to put one more person up.
Unless I misheard, I thought Jemmy volunteered to be like, I'll take, like, I trust you guys. You could put me up. I trust you guys not to actually then vote me in. I may have misheard that, but I thought she said that. When they were forming the Troika.
Oh, I missed that. I believe you. I missed that.
I could have sworn I heard she said something to the effect of, like, I trust you guys. Do what you have to do. You could put me up. And then I trust you guys not to vote me in. I thought that's what she said, but
I remember her, like, looking at them and saying, I trust you. But I might have just missed it. It happens once or twice.
So, yeah, I mean, if let's say that didn't happen, then they should have realized that at least one of them had to go up. And then it's just a matter of if they believe that they wouldn't be voted in.
So when Kara, Kayla, and Natalie come up, Tony's making good arguments for Natalie. She's a rookie. She has money to go into the pot. I don't even feel bad. You 100% deserve this. Like, Natalie got what she deserved from bad effing gameplay. Maybe the whole season, but at least the letting those three men be the Troika without her.
Yeah, and then Kayla thinks that, like, anything she did in that moment had anything to do with their decision, when I think their decision was made, like, the second they formed the three people that were going up. So, I mean, she could think that by her quote-unquote exposing Natalie and anything to do with it, but correct me if I'm wrong, I think they were voting in Natalie no matter what.
Yeah, I was going to say later, like, Kayla is taking complete and full credit for getting Natalie in. I'm glad you said that. I was going to sort of just be like, how much credit does she deserve? I feel like none. I feel like the Inquisition never matters unless, like, you could only hurt yourself at the Inquisition. I don't think you can really help anything.
Yeah, I think, as we've seen, what the real Inquisition is normally is when they, like, go out and drink and then people, like, get mad about different powwows and things that might happen. That's the real Inquisition when they're doing the stage stuff. Very little, if anything, comes out of that.
There was, like, a sad moment to me when Natalie was in the Inquisition and Kayla is saying, like, I thought Kayla did a good job. I just don't think it was anything they didn't know already, which is, like, why they put Natalie up in the first place. But sort of saying, like, okay, of course, now she's willing to work with you. Where was she all season? She was just working with Nelson before the bananas. Like, she's too wishy-washy. Good points. When Natalie's like, I've been on good teams and that's luck, and part of this game is luck. When the Troika's setting the team or somebody with a grenade is setting the team, if they put you on a team that wins, it's usually because of either your ability or because of your relationship with that person. That's not luck. Like, I think that she should have been able to sort of own that as game more than she just saying it was luck.
Yeah, 100%. I think that kind of fits with what Natalie sometimes tries to do, with that she just tries to, like, be agreeable in the moment of what people are saying and not necessarily giving herself enough credit, because she just tries to be as, like, flexible and, like, I can't think of a word, like, spongy to a situation where people can use her for how they think they want to, and then she feels she could adapt to it. I don't know why she wouldn't just be like, no, actually, I contributed to all those wins, and the reason, as you said, they keep putting me on those teams because I did help contribute. So if they thought you would contribute, you would have been on those teams. So yeah, it was very odd that she wouldn't be like, why she agreed with that as being luck.
Now, this is a perfect time for me. I've been meaning to ask. I know we have some OG Coral fans who are listeners. For people who don't know what I'm talking about, educate yourselves. No, but Coral was a Real World and the Challenge, like, just legend. Now, she has a line that I remember only from whatever season. Might have been the Real World, might have been the Challenge, from just straight up watching whatever year it came out. So my memory is like, it's behind the cobwebs. But I've used this many, many times in my life, and I might be butchering it, and I haven't been able to find it. So if anybody knows the quote or knows where it's from, please do at me.
This is quite the buildup right here.
Well, no, it's she says something like, get ready. I was born ready. I don't have to get ready. And it is one of the most useful, most quotable lines from the Challenge in my mind or in my daily life, which just tells you a little bit more than you want to know about my life. Kara here gives us a little new Coral. You don't have to get ready if you stay ready. So I'm staying ready. If somebody could just reminded me to ask if anyone knows what I'm talking about, please. Somebody did actually follow up about the commercials when I did this plug. So this is just my weekly segment of things I want to know that I can't find.
There we go. I'm sure someone will dig it up.
Let's talk about the ring.
So, the Challenge is Spanish torture. As I mentioned, they got very uncreative with the ring. And this was basically, I don't know why it's really called torture. I don't know what the torture part was. But you had to walk across kind of a tightrope, holding on to a rope and just walk across and hit a bell on the other side as the ropes kind of were flimsy and moving and falling over.
I want to talk about how they throw Natalie in here. I think Tony is getting so supremely cocky. Like, he laughs when he does something. He throws her a wink. He does the whole earn your stripes deal. Like, oh, someone once said, like, you know who said it, Tony. Umberto wants to know, how the hell has Tony been so cocky and such an asshole and people still like him?
Yeah, I think this... I don't think the cockiness has really come through until this week. I think this is where I even noted it before when Brad was like, oh, let's sit down and like talk about what we want to do. And Tony was kind of laughing it off. And it seemed like he was like just like placating Brad. I was like, ah, it's all good. I got this or whatever. So I think this has really been the episode where the cockiness has come through. And I think that's why he's been pretty likable up until this point.
Yeah, it's just, I feel like what I said last week, like, it's just this unnatural role. Like, Tony could just be like, you know, it's like when he's going on the last Challenge round, and he's like, it's Tony time. Like, I don't know. Like, it just seems like such false confidence to me. Like, I actually do think he's worried it could fall apart at any moment, even though he's saying he feels invincible. And I just would rather like a little bit of more humble Tony. Like, I almost miss recovery Tony, not when Tony was being a complete basket case, but when Tony was like in a remorse zone of like having to tell his like fiance something bad. Like, I miss a more humble Tony. I think he could be super, super likable performing the way he is and acting the way he is and making the moves people want to see if he could just stop trying to be bananas and start actually making it Tony time. I don't know that he ever like actually will be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, if this was like other reality shows, this would be like the prime moment where it's like, all right, the blind side is coming. He's getting super cocky. They're like, this is where he gets cut. But with how much time is left in the season and just the structure of the Challenge in general, like, I just don't see that happening. So unless... I mean, the only way Tony loses, he's just going to lose. Like, there's no like real blindside monumental moment coming.
Oh, I like think this could very easily be Tony's coronation. Like, I don't think this edit is like as bad. Like, I feel like we see an edit like this in these moments. Like, he even gets two little segments during the rites of passage. Like, instead of when Brad starts running, Tony's the one talking. Like, I could see Tony winning. I don't think.
I agree.
I don't think they're setting him up for failure, but I do think, like, I'm not surprised that people have the reaction of sort of like, okay, Tony's becoming unlikable now. He's having a big swing from like psycho to like overconfident.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if that kind of continues the last couple weeks.
And then TJ shames Natalie for letting the guys in, again brings it up and asks like why the hell she didn't speak up. What do you think about this sort of more like interveny TJ?
I like it. I think that we're almost like building towards like the eliminations getting a little tribal council vibe. I think it's good that the, you know, all these situations are kind of called out and it forces people to kind of speak for why they do things. Even when a couple seasons ago, when he always would constantly ask them, like, who are you voting for and why? I think it forces people to be explain themselves in the group settings, and that can sometimes lead to more stuff down the road. So I hope they do more of it.
Yeah, I definitely got some intervening Probst vibes as well. I think it's a little different because it's sort of after the fact. Like, there's nothing that, you know, when Jeff is talking a tribal, whether or not people think there's live tribals, there's still like a result to happen. This is sort of like after the fact, you just get a scolding from TJ. I like it. I agree with you, but I would be really, really annoyed if I were the guys in the Troika.
Yeah. Yeah. It's considering this is like an uncommon thing for even to happen in the first place.
Yeah. No, I'm just sort of like, shut up, stop giving it away. Like, 'cause now if we have to do this again next week, people are going to be more motivated. Like, just shut up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they almost liked it, 'cause it was kind of like feeding their like egos. Like, they're like, oh, look at these guys master manipulating all of you to get their way. And they're like, ah, yeah, see, we're kings of this place.
Yeah. All right. So Natalie goes home. Not really much to say about this.
No, I mean, I think people were saying how this was built for Natalie's, but like, especially with like kind of her past about some of the stuff that she's done. And it kind of was. And it's disappointing to see her performance, because she started off so well and then kind of just got stuck, flamed out, and then Cam was able to keep her composure. I think she basically won doing it like upside down, which was kind of weird to see, but I mean, good for Cam. It was interesting. This is the first, even though she's 3-0, this is the first time she's actually sent home someone. That's kind of an interesting factoid for Cam's elimination.
That's fun.
Yeah,
I didn't really agree that I didn't buy that this was built for Natalie shtick. Like, I was a gymnast. This is not gymnastics. You don't get tied to little wobbly ropes and shimmy across in high pressure situations. Like, I just sort of was like, I don't buy that Natalie's cheerleading stuff makes her any more qualified than Cam, who's just a beast athlete at this. So I thought I was like kind of annoyed. I was getting hit over the head with how much of like, you knew Natalie was going home. The second car is like, Natalie was built for this challenge. I don't know why I'm making Cara like 100%. A Jewish woman from New Jersey, but that's how I felt. Like, trust me, I know this, she's gonna win. And you're like, oh, okay, of course, like, cue the fail.
Yep, 100%.
So let's talk about these grenades. We see the grenades for what's gonna happen immediately. I thought it was gonna be next week, and then I was like, wait, we still have like 10 minutes left.
Yeah, I was very confused. I'm like, what else is happening this episode?
So yeah, it's take everyone's cash, endure, which is make someone do 30 burpees before the challenge, or add time to the challenge.
Yeah, so Cam gets that, and then they are off to Czech Republic.
One thing about endure, I am like shocked that this is an option for a grenade, because like, what if somebody picked that? Like, we're gonna watch someone do 30 burpees and then compete just as well. Like, these people could do 30 burpees in their sleep, or at least anyone you'd give it to.
Yeah, I almost would wish it was anything, just like a more comical thing to force them to do. I can't think of an example offhand, but just doing like a normal exercise is pretty boring. But doing like, I don't know, like a game like Dizzy Bat or something like that, like to do something like comically stupid that would mess with their game would be a lot more interesting than at like 30 burpees.
I like that. Like, let's put somebody in a sumo wrestling like inflatable fat suit to do the entire challenge.
Yeah, like go Big Brother style. If we're bringing the people on, you can might as well incorporate some of their shticks.
All right, so the challenge is called Help Me Rhonda. Inexplicably to me. I don't know. Was that like something to do with the location? Did I miss why this was called that?
I totally missed it, but I guess I think Cara said it was named after her mom, right? Isn't Cara's name Rhonda? So I guess that's why they did it.
Do you think that like has bad karma for Tony? Give it or oh, no, that was right. That was Tony's mom. You look like my mom, and then, you know, I don't know. Tony's not good with moms.
Yeah. No, that was a good callback. That's right. That was with Cara. Good callback.
It's not a perfect lineup. Anyway.
It works.
So the fastest guy and the fastest girl are gonna split 25K, and the slowest guy and slowest girl are splitting a flight home.
Yes. Hopefully not middle seat bachelor style, but yeah, fastest guy wins. And I mean, this was, it seemed like a pretty intense mini finalish type challenge, and then they just, as we talked about earlier, they just zoom past all of it just to get a little monologue where every person talking about what they want to hope to accomplish and all their hopes and dreams and everything, and then boom, we get a nice little to be continued.
Yeah, this was boring. I'm like, I love a mini final. We talk about that every season. We love the challenge that kind of like makes people show what they got going into the final. I love the concept that the last two people are just going to get clipped. Like, I like that. I don't understand why we're watching people run as individuals. We watch them go through town and then we see them huffing and puffing at the finish line one at a time. Like, to me, this was not interesting television.
No, the one thing I did enjoy was them like running amongst people in the car, yelling at people like, get out of the way. That was like the one thing I did enjoy. But yeah, other than that, I just don't get why they can never just do a race. Like, they did it to start the season and I was like, great, seeing like who would actually win and who would come in last. Just why can't they all just go at the same, do a challenge where they all can just go at the same time?
Yeah, I don't know. This didn't do anything for me. But let's talk about the use of the grenade here, because that, I think, is something to talk about. Cam does a little Tony switcheroo and says, for old time's sake, she's gonna use it on Devin and take his $16,000.
Yeah, very interesting decision. I thought, I think the conventional wisdom would be add time, especially add time to a girl. That way it increases your chances of not going home. So I think that would probably have been the better way to go. But I guess her sense is like, this is close to the end. Let me try to get more on my bankroll, because we don't necessarily know how payouts will work at the end. So I mean, I guess I get the logic, but I feel like the safer option is just adding time either to a really strong competitor, or even if you want to add to like Jemmy to increase her chances of just going home.
Yeah, Tyler Morton Karibo and Jonas Dodd both asked similar questions of just like, why take the money when you can add it to one of the girls to give you a better opportunity. I think this is sort of like a cocky move from Cam, like looking at the field, thinking she can beat them. I don't think she's wrong. And so she's just sort of like, I'm not worried. I'm not going to be the last one. But it would be scary to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a risk. It's definitely a little bit of a risk. And especially because you're not, I don't know who has the most money at all. I mean, it seemed like Devin did not have the most money based off how she said it. But I mean, $16,000 is still nice to bank. It's just a matter of if and how she would go home with that money.
I mean, look, if Cam goes home next week by a minute, we'll say it was the stupidest thing she ever did. If Cam finishes cleanly with no issue, not even close to the bottom, we'll say this was the right move. I think Cam can safely assume this was the right move.
Yeah, I think if anything, her using the time would almost help. I don't think there's a, barring a catastrophic incident, I don't think she was going to go home. I think if anything, she could have used it to help her win the challenge. But then I guess it's just better just to take the $16,000, since that's more than you would get for winning the challenge anyway. So I guess by that logic, it does kind of make sense.
Although a minute in this kind of challenge is probably a lot more. I mean, we don't know what, maybe it was 30 seconds, maybe it was 5 minutes, but it was a minute in the first challenge. And I feel like that is a lot less important than a minute would be in a foot race.
Right. I mean, what was it, like a mile and then like a going across the water and then you need to go down and then run again. I bet that probably took them at least like a half hour, 40 minutes.
I just think like if you're going to use it to like who can win, like it is possible that that could be that. I could see like Kara and Cam finishing within a minute of each other, let's say, like, whereas I feel like in the group challenge, a minute was like nothing.
Right. But then you're better off just taking the money, right? Because you get more money by taking the money than guaranteeing you win.
Oh, yeah, no, I totally agree.
So,
Mike Christensen says, is it fair to say with the season near wrapping up that the whole concept of the grenade has been a bust?
Yeah, it wasn't great, especially because so many of them were just picking the teams, and then that almost came close to guaranteeing victory. Although, they were important decisions because we saw people fail at it. I kind of wish the money aspect was more important. Like, if you could take someone's money and then that was yours, I think that would have influenced a lot more people's decisions. I think having people, when they just leave, they don't get their money, I think changed a lot of people's minds about which grenades to start to use.
I agree, but I don't think if more people took money, we'd have less of the confident conversation of like, if we send this person in, they're going to have a grenade. I don't want them to go for me. We have to like massage it. But I don't think we've seen people talk like that, but I don't think anybody actually has gently put somebody in so that they don't get their grenade used on them.
Yeah, I think it was an interesting idea. I think just the execution didn't work out. I think they needed to workshop the ideas for the grenades a little bit more.
I think they had to be able to be used on the Troika.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I did enjoy two bits of information from the emotional outbursts, I guess, each character, each contestant was allowed. One is that, LOL, that Tony can finally let his kids watch a season. yep. I loved that.
That was good. That was good. What else? The only one, the one that stood out for me was like apparently like Leroy. I didn't know Leroy was adopted. That was, and then he talked about all about wanting to kind of like help open a home for like adopted kids. And like, oh, that was touching.
Yes, that was the, you know, you think you know these people, but Leroy and his sister and his daddy are opening up a group home, which is so freaking awesome. And it's a side of Leroy we haven't seen. And like, I didn't know Leroy is adopted and all of this. And I'm just like, that's the one thing that I thought was worth the challenge being set up the way it was. I do have to say, I love Leroy. So I feel like if anybody else did this, I would call it out. So I have to do it here. There is something about a grown man calling his dad daddy, but in this situation, I am here for it.
Yeah. Even like hearing when you were describing him, it was like Leroy, his sister, and his daddy. I was like, ooh. Not great.
All right, so I think that brings us to Twitter for the week. Quick shout out and thank you to our 5-star reviewers, Hot Sauce 513 and Johnny Bodine. Thank you so much for your support. We really, really appreciate it, especially as we get into the final few episodes of the challenge. It keeps us going here. If you want to join in and let us know what you think, you can do so at robhasawebsite.com/challenge iTunes, where you can subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. There are other things you could do, but I don't need to tell you about them.
Yeah, 5 stars and comments. That's all we want.
All right. So the digital communications manager, Megan Elizabeth, was working as usual last night. And she said, or she sent us some funny tweets. Kara was actually tweeting about watching Survivor. Now, I have to speculate here that potentially we see Kara cast on Survivor, because these tweets are just too much bullshit. Either she's jockeying to get on, she's been like tapped and let go and she wants them to know she's still there, or I don't know. Like, these, you tell me.
Well, I don't know. I can't see the tweet, so you'll have to fill me in.
Cara Maria tweeted, just watched at Survivor CBS Game Changers in all caps, episode 7. And I'm not crying. You are crying. Cry emoji. I'm deaf crying. Heart emoji. Rainbow
what
emoji.
What was episode 7 of that season?
I don't know. But the point is, like, why on March 18th are you tweeting to Survivor season that's not currently airing? Yeah, is
very odd.
That's thirsty.
Very thirsty. Very thirsty.
Then she tweeted, when I come back in another life, I want to be as much of a boss. I want to be as much of a boss as at Sandra D. Twine, which is Sandra Diaz Twine, at Survivor CVS, hashtag Survivor, with a gif of Jeff Probst.
Who wouldn't want to be Sandra?
So I am taking this far too, like, far too far, much too far. But I would also be here for Cara Maria on Survivor.
I think it could be fun. I love crossovers. I hope so. They all get, not they all, but I hope some of them get a chance to go on either Big Brother or Survivor. I think it could be fun.
All right. So that's rumored to be on next season, with Cara and Cam. You could check that out. Cara Maria retweeted it. Well, you can't, Brian. People can check it out.
Yeah.
To make a note to that point, casting spoilers for the next season are available online. Brian and I are going to take the approach of not discussing them until they are confirmed by MTV. Yeah. But if you want to pursue, seek them out, they're there.
Correct.
All right, so from last week, you were talking about this last week, that Laurel tweeted, wouldn't it have been more awesome if I could have picked who I was going against? I know exactly who I would choose. I assume that was Nicole, but Cara Maria wrote, no shit, Laurel, you would beat me in anything physical. No shit. In other news, the sky is blue and you are still a bitter, mean bitch.
Sheesh.
Yeah, woof.
I mean, I think Cara could take Laurel in some things. I don't know why she has to act like
thing,
that.
Like, oh yeah, of course. Or like she actually thinks... is agreeing that she could always beat her.
Don't they both still live in Montana together too, or does Laurel not live there anymore?
You know, I don't know where they live.
It's worth a shot.
Leroy tweeted, when you're trying to maintain your diet, but the side of at I am Cam I am's neck smells like a glazed honey bun. Ooh. And a very affectionate photo of the two of them accompanied that. So I'm here all day for Leroy and Cam.
Give me the lamb.
So actually, our DCM provided suggestions such as Camroy or Lee Cam. Lick 'em.
I think it still needs to be workshopped.
Kiroy, I like.
Yeah, Kiroy's not bad.
I've been nice to get carried like the other rookies, though. Nothing comes free. I'd always rather hashtag earn my sh-. I mean, she's justified, but it is like, whatever.
Oh. Poop that.
And then Cam wrote, this elimination clearly wasn't built for someone like me. Delph built for someone smaller, like a gymnast, maybe. Don't use the chin scratch emoji against me, Cam. It's like a child.
The goal is to stay out of eliminations. I hate people that, oh, I'd rather just go in and win. No, the goal, you want to stay out.
Those tweets are questionable.
And I'll, so is she saying it was rigged for someone? Like, I don't understand what that even meant. I don't even know what that even meant. Like, was she firing a shot at Natalie? But Natalie's not, like, smaller. Like, Natalie's bigger than Kara.
Let's not get into size things. This is what got us in trouble with Mel.
Did Kara tweet that?
Look at her freaking DJ Mel tweets or whatever. Anyway, let's wrap this up. I'm done.
Why do you still call her Mel? Alrighty. You can subscribe at robswebsite.com/challenge iTunes. Follow me on Twitter at @CohenBryan_. They can follow you.
You know what it is.
At Last Tweets. We'll be back for episode lucky number 13 next week. Until then, have a good one.